Good evening, everyone. I want to begin with an appreciation. I somehow low these many decades into my practice of Zen Buddhism, am always somehow a little surprised by the power of our intention in coming together and sitting in stillness, and how just useful and helpful to me personally it is. And I appreciate the hearts of each of you that bring you here, that bring you back, that hold you still. This peculiar thing we do of sitting in stillness, sometimes a spacious stillness, sometimes a contracted and agitated stillness, with our own minds intimately present to our own selves, and just each of us doing this practice for ourselves. We help each other. We support each other. We nourish each other. And in fact, through doing that, the world. And it's no small thing. One of our sutras says we can't do it by ourselves and no one else can do it for us. So I just appreciate y'all coming out to do this thing when in some sense almost anything else is easier. So I wanted to begin by reading, it's kind of like a poem by one of our recent Dharma ancestors, Joan Sutherland. She teaches as part of the Pacific Zen Institute and is a collaborator with John Tarrant in the translations of the koans that we use. And she's a really beautiful writer. She was somehow surprised when I described the things, the like of which I'm about to read you one, as poems. But they're clearly poems. So she says, every act of love is a deep unknowing, a plunge into life that we're aware, even as we do it, will contain sorrow, may end in grief, but has its own necessity. This has chosen me. In the vast expanse of time and space, I choose this. Not as a charm against the night, but to take the night into us, to devote ourselves to the few bits of the primary and ordinary mystery given into our care. Every act of love is a deep unknowing, a plunge into life that we're aware, even as we do it, will contain sorrow, may end in grief, but has its own necessity. This has chosen me. In the vast expanse of time and space, I choose this, not as a charm against the night, but to take the night into us, to devote ourselves to the few bits of the primary and ordinary mystery given to our care. This is a really beautiful and poetic and heartful kind of presentation of the essence of this open-hearted, broken-hearted, broke-open-hearted Zazen. Our Dharma ancestor who was a teacher of Joan Sutherland's teacher, our Dharma ancestor Robert Aitken, says our task is not to clear up the mystery, but to make the mystery clear. This sitting in this deep unknowing, this unknowing about the future, unknowing about the present, unknowing of the boundaries of the world that influence us, unknowing of the our own capacity to influence the world, sitting in this place beyond all knowing. One of our koans says, not knowing is most intimate. Sitting intimately in this place beyond all knowing, sitting intimately with that which cannot be met except through unknowing. Sitting in humble presence to the reality, the vast truth that there is so little we know. And truly, when we really investigate, we don't even know who is this one I call me. Even that thing which we assume, which the structure of our language communicates, is so basic and so beyond examination. When we sit and try to find a fixed, unchanging essence, something that is not dependent, not just an expression of the causes and conditions flowing together, we can't find a fixed, unchanging thing that is me. Even this is not knowable. This is meeting the dark as dark. An ancient poem says, within darkness there is light, but do not try to understand that light. Within light there is darkness. No. Within darkness there is light, but do not look for that light. Within darkness there... Yeah. Within light there is darkness, but do not try to understand the darkness. Within darkness there is light, but do not look for the light. Right. This is the identity of relative and absolute. So the darkness includes the light, but we can only meet it and receive it as darkness. Every act of love is a deep unknowing. And this is our practice, our practice of sitting present to this unknowing. Our practice of sitting still in the mystery is itself an act of love. Love for ourselves, all beings, and the universe itself. And this is, in a certain way, one of the great mysteries and miracles of this practice, is that when we just get out of the way, we can touch this. We don't get to know it and grab it and hold it and keep it. And when we shine our flashlight on that darkness, we don't see it. But when we get out of the way, we can meet the fruits of this act of love, which is intimate presence. And it's intimate presence to the whole mess of life. A plunge into life that we're aware, even as we do it, even as we plunge, will contain sorrow, may end in grief, but has its own necessity. This practice isn't armor against sorrow, isn't protection or cure for grief. It is a practice which enlarges our heart's capacity, our spirit's capacity to be with the sufferingness that it turns out is included in life. And in this sufferingness is also love. Can be met with love in a way that transforms it precisely into itself, the same but different. Life will contain sorrow, may end in grief, but has its own necessity. And this necessity points to the invisible sign over the Zendo. Run if you can. If anything else will work, maybe that'll be easier. But we find that that actually showing up to the suffering, the sorrow, the grief, showing up lovingly to all that has its own necessity. There's not another choice. This has chosen me. And so in the vast expanse of time and space, I choose this. And here this echoes another one of the pieces we read, Liberation from All Obstructions. I vow to affirm what is. If there's cost, I choose to pay. Whom I encounter, I choose to meet. What I shoulder, I choose to bear. Therefore, I vow to choose this Dharma entrance gate. This gate is the only one open to us. The gate of our actual lives. The gate of our actual experience. Sometimes the gate of sorrow, the gate of discouragement, the gate of tiredness and foggy mind. If only everything were different, then we would go through a different gate. But in fact, things are as they are. My life is as it is. This moment, inclusive of all of it, is as it is. And this is the only place I can enter. And we start by affirming what is. One of the other pieces we read from another Joan, Joan Tollefson, Awakening to Discouragement. Says that part of waking up is becoming sensitive to how we become discouraged, how we close down, and where we go for false comfort. Meeting this discouragement is also a Dharma entrance gate. This is a powerful tool, especially in times like this. When there is so much to be discouraged about. However, times like this comes with a little asterisk on it, because even in the Buddha's time, he said, the world is on fire. And yet, letting in what is, being with what is, affirming what is. This is our practice. Being present to what is. In the vast expanse of time and space, this is time and space here. This is what the universe is doing here. You are what the universe is doing there. And we choose this. We awaken to the sorrow, to the grief, to the discouragement, to the anxiety, to the confusion. Not as a charm against the night. But to take the night into us. Take the darkness of not knowing into us. To take the darkness that contains light but still appears as darkness. To meet that fully. Honor that fully. Receive and affirm that fully. We affirm the light by receiving and entrusting ourselves to the dark. This practice isn't a charm against the night. It isn't a magic spell to ward off suffering. It isn't a magic spell to ward off the states of mind or the experiences we'd rather not have. That is called aversion. This is the opposite. This practice is about being able to meet those things, precisely the things we would rather not have, and draw them in intimacy, remain present with them. And all of these stories about certainties and futures we receive in the vast container of not knowing, the vast container that affirms the fact that ultimately, in fact, the only thing we can honestly say is that we do not know. Not as a charm against the night, but to take the night into us, to devote ourselves to the few bits of the primary and ordinary mystery given into our care. The mystery of this body and mind, the mystery of the fact of being itself, the mystery of suffering and thriving, the mystery of connection and compassion and hearts that resonate tearfully with other hearts. The mystery that allows us to receive and be received by the universe. That allows us to lovingly meet even anger, ourselves, even a messed up world. Caring for this mystery with this breath, this ankle, this shoulder, this bowl of food, which is none other than the universe itself, this encounter with this being, this homeless person, this cashier, this intimate partner. This is the primary and ordinary mystery given into our care. And we practice this in Zazen so that we can carry it out and actualize it elsewhere. And this relates to the piece by the ancient Chinese master Hongzhi, which we read. It says, having turned yourself around, this is turned around the light to shine within, having met, turning around and meeting ourselves, meeting the universe as we ourselves, accepting your situation. If you set foot on the path, spiritual energy will marvelously transport you. We can also say, if you set foot in the Sangha, community energy will marvelously transport you. But this points to, it isn't the thing you do or you create. You turn around, you accept this. Contact phenomena with total sincerity. Wholeheartedly meet, spaciously receive discouragement, grief, sorrow, fear, angst. Not a single atom outside yourself. Find yourself partly in and partly out, says this nun circling the hall. If you find yourself drawn to this path and also drawing away, I can assure you, oh my sisters, you are in good company. Just keep going. Sometimes the most direct path isn't a straight line. I'm going to close with reading John Sutherland's piece one more time. Every act of love is a deep unknowing, a plunge into the life that we're aware, even as we do it, will contain sorrow, may end in grief, but has its own necessity. This has chosen me. In the vast expanse of time and space, I choose this, not as a charm against the night, but to take the night into us, to devote ourselves to the few bits of the primary and ordinary mystery given into our care. Please sit comfortably and be invited into our practice of Dharma dialogue. Resonance, response, questions, further explorations of any of these pieces of love, of unknowing, of darkness and light. Sandy.
Resonating with well, with everything really, but you said making the mystery clear, and so just before I came over here, I was looking online. I was looking up emptiness for some reason, and emptiness. Like I've been studying emptiness for many years. Like one of my favorite books is called Emptiness, and I think sometimes I thought, well, you know, at some point, I'm going to just be almost like an expert in emptiness. And today I realized, looking it up, I realized that my understanding, whatever understanding I might even have, of emptiness comes and goes just like everything else. And it's probably always going to be like that, and I'm never really going to get to some total understanding. Anyway, so it was like a nice like acceptance of like not knowing.
Yeah.
I'll still keep reading, that, of course. But,
yeah. Yeah, and so well expressed. Understandings come and go, but it is not about understanding. What is this thing that you can always entrust yourself, regardless of whether you understand the thing that you understood yesterday or not? You know, in a certain way, I love this phrase, become an expert in emptiness. In a certain way, that is this task, but becoming an expert of emptiness isn't about knowing and being really certain about emptiness. But this sitting in intimate presence to not knowing, this is becoming an expert in emptiness. And meeting emptiness in the world of form is also becoming an expert of emptiness. And all of the forms of Zen, these are forms of emptiness. These are tools with which to entrust ourselves, meet, express, hold this emptiness that cannot be held. The book that Sandy mentioned, Emptiness by Guy Armstrong, is really, really good, and I recommend it.
John's poem, there was a line in it that just sort of clarified it, which was something about this chooses me, in all of vast time and space, this chooses me, and I choose this, and I think then the choicefulness is meeting the this and not being the first to choose it. So it's like this always felt out of order to me, this poem until now, where it's sort of like, what is your choosing to meet? And I was just reflecting on how often lately I've been vocalizing, I feel lost, and something about that poem and this is making me feel like choosing to meet the lostness,
right.
And it's a, just a really sort of subtly different way of thinking about it than I thought about.
Yeah, thank you for naming that so clearly. This is also the so this practice is about freedom, but if that freedom doesn't include the freedom to be bound when we're bound and stuck when we're stuck, it is conditional and fragile and will fail. And so to responsively choose that which we have been chosen by, that is the freedom.
See that, like, I just get to choose my universe, and I get to choose how things are. But no, there's actually the necessity of the way things happen, the way things are, and it cuts through that fantasy in it, and in a very deep way. So I just want to share.
Right. Yeah. So in a certain way, choose is like way too much agency and control. And yet, choosing this thing that is of necessity present is powerful. And there's a an image in Buddhist iconography of the wish-fulfilling pearl. You see sometimes Jizo Bodhisattva carries it. I don't know if our Jizo back there has it. Sometimes it's being, and this, the wish-fulfilling pearl will grant any wish, so long as the wish is for things to be transformed into themselves. For all beings as they are to be saved as they are. Thank you, Ilya. Josh.
There's, I don't really have much to say about it, but there's something that you said that is like very, I don't know, like was very thought-provoking for me about, I think you said, you can't see the dark with a flashlight. Which is just like, to me, it feels like it really speaks to something about like wisdom, like effort versus like opening.
Right. Yeah, and this flashlight is also the flashlight of consciousness. And it doesn't matter what we shine the flashlight of consciousness on. It will never be darkness. It will never be the things beyond consciousness. And so all we can do is entrust ourselves to precisely that which we cannot see.
I also had a particular reaction to liberation from all obstructions, which I've always previously read as kind of one of those internet life hack websites. Like, one weird trick to get around the difficult parts of life. You just choose the thing that you get thrust upon you. And I've always kind of like regarded it with a very skeptical eyebrow. And then, like, today, just reading through it again, and kind of like this, the beginning has the setup of, here's the thing you want to avoid, choose it anyway, right? And then, at the end, kind of out of nowhere and without the setup, came, therefore I vow to choose this Dharma entrance gate. And it isn't a Dharma entrance gate that is thrust upon me and that I'm having to suddenly deal with. It's something that I can just, like, willingly go into. And accept, and I kind of like turned it around in a way that was new to me.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. You know, and that's the power of the liturgy and the Zen stories and the Zen language, is we don't hear it till we hear it, and then when we hear it, we're like, oh, there it is. Why didn't anyone tell me? That's why we do it over and over and over again, in the hopes that maybe we'll hear it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you.